Anyway, it's time once more to welcome back Mike Davis of the Ready Town Museum. And since over the past weekend, we observed the armistice, which finally brought the First World War, or Great War, to an end. It seemed fitting to take a look at some pertinent local issues connected with that war. So welcome back, Mike. It's good to see you again.
Scott, it's lovely to see you, especially on a Monday, because the Rayleigh Town Museum is not open to the public until Wednesday, Friday and Saturday between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m.
So we haven't messed you about. That's good news. Anyway, now, I believe you currently have an exhibition at the museum connected with the First World War. So perhaps you can give us a few details of that. Well, how long is it going to be there, etc.?
Indeed. We always have an exhibition at this time of year, which we entitle Rayleigh Remembers, to commemorate the Rayleigh men who have fallen during conflicts, not only in World War I, World War II, but elsewhere as well. Mm. Now, the exhibition opened on the 18th of October and finishes this Saturday. So if you want to come along and see it, you better come along. It's called Rayleigh Remembers. We have details of all the 92 Rayleigh men who fought and died in World War One.
Yeah.
We have military uniforms. We have posters. We have books. We have something we call an object of the month. And this month's object is a lovely World War One diary by somebody called Charles Reed. So fascinating reading for people when they come to the museum.
Great stuff. All right. Now, whenever you come in, I always try to do a bit of research on the subject, but on this occasion, I've drawn pretty much a blank and wasn't able to find much detail. But one indisputable fact that I did find was that 204 men of Rayleigh fought in that war, of whom 112 made it back. But 92 failed to return. Now, of course, we already found out in an earlier visit of yours that two of those returnees founded the local cinema. But I did wonder if we should perhaps today just concentrate on one man who didn't make it back, since his story perhaps brings home the true horror of war. So would you like to start by telling us about this young man?
Certainly. Yes, indeed. In 2014, four of my colleagues spent a whole year researching, at that stage, the 51 Rayleigh men who fought and died in World War One. Mm. But after a year of research, they found there were in actual fact 92. The particular person we want to concentrate on here is somebody called Samuel Hazel, who joined up at the tender age of just 17 in 1915. And I'll just observe that this was prior to the introduction of conscription, which didn't take place until the following January. Now, Samuel's family were members of a religious group called the Peculiar People, which was an offshoot of the Wesleyan movement and was founded in 1838 in Rochford by somebody called John Banyard. The Peculiar People were opposed to any of their members getting involved in war, and many of them were conscientious objectors, and we have many stories about them in the museum. So young Samuel would clearly have known he was going against his family's and his religion's beliefs, and that his parents and his family held dear. This could have been teenage rebellion with the lure of adventure in far-flung places, away from the quiet, sedate farms of Essex, so might have been a case of just being swept along by the fervour to serve king and country. He left his parents and brothers and sisters in their home at the Weir in Rayleigh to join the 1st Battalion, the Essex Regiment, who took part in the first day of the Battle of the Somme on July the 1st, 1916.
Now, I have to say that if it were me, you wouldn't have seen me for the dust. I'm afraid that I wouldn't have been joining up. I'd have far rather been working on the fields, but there you are. Now, knowing what we know now, clearly going to be involved with the regiment that was involved with the Battle of the Somme, clearly wasn't good news.
Absolutely. By the following year, 1917, the war had become a struggle of attrition. The opposing Allied and German armies were stuck in a stalemate of trench warfare on the Western Front. In the spring of that year, the Allies planned a new, massive offensive. The French would assault the German lines at the southern end of the front in the Champagne area of France, while the British would launch diversionary attacks in the north around a town named Arras. an attack was planned from the precarious Monchy salient. Just two battalions of men would attack up Hill 100, which was named in actual fact Infantry Hill by the British. The plan was to capture Infantry Hill and send out patrols to check for the enemy. In hindsight, this badly planned attack appears to have been almost suicidal on the Monchy salient, although surrounded by three sides by enemy forces. By now, Samuel was a corporal, and amongst the men from the 1st Essex Regiment and the Newfoundland Regiment who carried out the attack, which started well. And by 7 a.m. on the 14th of April, it was reported that Infantry Hill had been captured. However, in their first use of a new defensive employment of elastic defence, as it was known, a German counterattack was delivered with such speed and precision that over 1,000 Essex and Newfoundlanders were killed, 19-year-old Samuel Hazel amongst them. Samuel Hazel had no known grave. His name appears amongst those of the 34,718 men commemorated at the Commonwealth War Graves Commission Memorial at Arras. After his parents died in 1929 and 1933 respectively, his name was included in the wording on their grave in the Rayleigh Cemetery and on the British Legion's Roll of Honour. Indeed, his name, like all those who died, was read out yesterday at the Legion as part of the town's commemoration. For his service to King and Country, this Essex teenager was posthumously awarded the Victory Medal, the British Medal, and the 1915 Star.
Now, if that story doesn't bring home the true horror of war, I don't know what does. So anyway, perhaps we could turn to another aspect, and I'm guessing that the First War didn't see a huge amount of air raids that we encountered in World War II, but am I right?
You wouldn't think so, Scott, but you'd think that, in a way, in April 1915, Southend came under attack, and then again in May when 70 bombs were dropped, killing three people and wounding three others, but there was no damage to building. Later that same year, a Zeppelin came under fire from the Royal Flying Corps and crashed narrowly, missing Billericay High Street, coming down at Snails Hall Farm off Green Farm Lane at Great Burstead. All 22 men of the crew were killed. In January 1918, observers warned that a minimum of 15 enemy aircraft were aloft, resulting in 80 fighters being scrambled. One of the invaders had trouble in two of its engines and was then forced to turn back by anti-aircraft fire at Billericay, but still released bombs on Roarath, Thundersley and Rayleigh, resulting in damage to three houses and a farm building. On the 7th of March 1918, two pilots were tragically killed at Dolliman's Farm.
And of course, we've talked about that because I believe there's a memorial especially for them.
Yes.
But they weren't actually killed in fighting, were they? I think they were brought down a storm.
Well,
right?
Well, very, very briefly, Scott, what happened was they were tasked with to intercepting the Gotha bombers, which were raiding over London.
Oh, right.
And one flew from Stomare's aerodrome, the other from Rochford, and their instructions were to find the railway line as their navigation and go to London. Now, tragically, they crashed into each other over Dolliman's Farm before they were able to. And it's a very sad story, the full story of which, Scott, can be found in the Rayleigh Town Museum.
Thank you very much indeed. Now, I know it's not directly connected with the First War, but I believe you wanted to make mention of the fact that there was, in fact, a prisoner of war camp in Rayleigh. So where was it?
OK, this is a very little-known story that I've been researching now for a number of years. Indeed, it was close to Rayleigh in Roarath Lane, close to where the Macro Superstore is located. Even as late as the 1950s, one could see remains of the Camp Theatre, where the sun of the scenery had been stored, and painted on big letters with the words "Smoking Verboten." I've been down there many times, and I've had words with some of the people who now rent the various units. One told me that in the 1950s he had a coach come down unexpectedly, and he went to see them to find out there were a party of Italian people on holiday wanted to know where they'd spent the war.
Grief.
After Italy surrendered in 1944, the camp was taken over by Germans, although they were able to freely wander around town, and many of them used to work in local farms around the area during the day. So they were quite tame. And the only thing is, and the fascinating thing, Scott, there is no official government record of that prisoner of war camp. I've got, and I've spoken to at least 20 Rayleigh people who were youngsters at the time. They remember their fathers working, taking them to various farms in Roarth and Battlesbridge to do the work, coming up to the high street to wander around. And a lot of the Italians would make little souvenirs from odd bits and pieces they found. And they would try and sell to the youngsters of Rayleigh for a penny or tuppence to just gain some little pocket money. And in actual fact, next time you go to Rayleigh Windmill, there is a lovely little wooden model of a windmill made by somebody which donated to the windmill by the Loker family of Rayleigh. So there's some fascinating stories. My next job is to contact the Red Cross in Geneva to see if they've got any records from a welfare point of view. So that just goes to show that history is ongoing, and no matter how much we know, there's always more to find out.
Good stuff. All right. Well, thanks for all of that, Mike. And all seriousness, I hope that your subject next time is going to be a little brighter.
Well, I sincerely hope so, Scott. And as we will be approaching Christmas, I'm thinking, and I'll talk to you outside of this, about possibly talking about Christmas times in Tudor times.